Everything that pops up, you think, oh shit, this could be the thing that ends it. All the things that you come across, in the end, it's solvable. That's the nice thing.
Welcome to the Lost Dog Podcast and the 12th edition of the Transcontinental Race, supported by our race partners Albion, Apadura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design. As we begin day 10 at TCO number 12, there's a chance that by the end of it, we'll see our first rider roll into the finish line in Kalamata. Robin Gamperla, cap number 1, has raced into Greece, and only the final Finnish parkour stands in the way of him and a second TCR title. As ever, Control Team 1 are right there with Robin up at the front. Here's race director David Eyre talking to race reporter Jake Thorpe.
Morning, David.
Good morning.
How's your head?
A little bit sore after being plied with some homemade rakia from our host in our hotel last night, but I shall survive.
How's it feel to be in Greece then, David?
It feels exciting. It feels like we're moving into the final chapter of the race now. We are currently joined in Greece by one rider, Robin Gamperla, who has pressed on south. And in what might be a decisive race moment, we have Nicolas Châtelet trapped on the other side of the border. So, unfortunately, he didn't make it through before it closed last night, and so ended up sleeping at the border post after a late arrival, which has allowed Robin to eke out a little bit more of an advantage, the result of which is that he's now approaching the Rio Anterio ferry, so the last of the three ferries which riders will be navigating over the course of this race. Yeah, it's hard to see anyone reeling him in now. A most likely unassailable lead, but there's still a few hundred kilometres left between him and the finish line, so won't count my chickens before they roost just yet.
Race reporter Sophie Potter and Control Team 2 are back in the Balkans, where they've managed to stop and speak to Pavel Palowski, cap number 8. He's already been on the bike for quite some time today, and he's also found that being able to communicate with the locals can have its benefits.
I mean, if you start at 2 in the night, it's noon now. It's been like your day started 10 hours ago.
Yeah, I know. But
that's a normal day at Jobbik.
4 a.m. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
So, I can see that in your face. Sorry, but...
It's okay. No, it's fine. It's not far. Let's stick to that.
Yeah. Are you trying to convince me or to convince yourself?
Yeah. Everybody.
Which language were you using when you were ordering? You talked to
Polish.
Me in Polish, no?
Yeah, it's different, but in these countries I speak in Polish to them, to people, and they understand maybe some words. I understand some words. I don't know. I found it's a little bit different vibe. Situation from Bosnia. There was Sarajevo, we were living, and there was a gas stop. And there was they built the new roundabout, and they wanted to bring television, and they blocked it because some politicians were coming there. Yeah, I accidentally stopped on the gas stop. The other rider arrived. I think he's French. I'm not sure. And he went there, and they sent him back. So he went back. And we were just sitting for a moment. I said, okay, I go, let's see what they say. And I go and I spoke to Polish to the guy, yeah. Hey, to co, mogę jechać? Whatever that means for him, I don't know. And he just looked at me and, okay, let's go. And I went and he stayed.
Here's Sophie to explain Control Team 2's plans for the day.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Control Car number 2. We slept yesterday in Serbia, and now we are in Montenegro. Then we will go to Kosovo, maybe probably go back to Montenegro and then to Serbia to catch riders there. So my running joke of the day, of this morning, has been to ask, like, which country are we again? This is half of the joke, because most of the time, I don't know, it's so tricky, but we've passed, like, already two borders this morning, and we're going to pass more this afternoon. Border, we're becoming really, really friendly with the border people. So I've only talked to one rider this morning because the road here are a bit of up and down, nothing too steep. So it's hard for me to, like, to find a road where I can actually run next to them, where it's not dangerous for either the rider or for me. Because, yes, safety first. So today we're going to focus again on the Flinta, as the Control Car number 1 is a bit ahead of us and already in Greece, actually. So, yeah, we're sticking around here and trying to catch as many riders as possible in the area. It's a bit tricky because there are different roads, different options. So we have to guess which road they're going to take, how long it's going to take us to go there, because the road are not rolling, that this is not our way at all. So our progress is quite often slower than we expect. And we miss riders. Sometimes we miss riders because they are going fast and they don't stop also. So let's see what the day brings us.
One rider who does stop to speak to Sophie is Wojtek Wronka, Cap 95, who found his sleep spot to be rather less than peaceful.
How are you?
Fine.
Yeah?
Slept well.
Yeah?
I treated myself to 5 hours. It's the longest it's been from the start.
Oh, wow.
But not in the hotel.
Outside?
Outside, because when I arrived, it seemed that the city wasn't sleeping at all. It was very loud, Balkan party.
So, oh no!
Yeah, so I've just eat something and fast food with like 30 kids around me shouting. And then just go around a few corners, get my BV and have a great sleep.
Okay.
So yeah.
Sophie also speaks to Raoul Massink, Cap 405.
Yeah, sometimes when you're tired and like, what's... like with these cars and then like... that's the thing, like, what am I doing? But usually it's... I really enjoy doing this. And I just put on some music and that always gets me in a good state of mind. Or put it off, that's also good to get you in a good state of mind. And also there are things to think about, but I'm also pretty... blank usually throughout.
There's like something mentally.
Yeah,
you're not thinking about anything.
No,
yeah.
Very it's very meditative for me, this, and it doesn't, I don't have to do a lot about it, and that's nice. And meditation, sometimes you need to work really really hard, and that's also here, by the way. You have to put in the effort of doing it. You have to be there every morning, get up, be there, write, and that's all you can do. Yeah, I struggle a bit with now, like, numbness.
In your hands?
In the hands, or also the, you know, the, well, the area in between.
In between your...
Yeah.
Your legs.
Legs, yeah. That's something I'm thinking now, like, okay, what do I need to adapt, or how is it... Yeah, I've never been on a ride this long so far.
So have you find solutions, or...
Not yet. Not yet.
Oh, things that actually improve it.
Yeah, I know. I think it's... I should wash my bib short, because I did it a few days back, and I guess that's one thing. And I could lower the noise of the saddle.
Mm. Yeah, washing your bib could be a good option.
Maybe. It's... but it's...
I don't know, but it seems like a good option to me.
It's days since the cutoff point passed for Control Point 1, all the way back in Flåm, Norway. But soon, tomorrow, it will be time for CP2 to also close its doors. Here's some timings from race director David.
So the next control point that's going to close is going to be Control Point 2 in the Tatra Mountains. So that closes at 11 a.m. on the 30th of July. So... as riders at the front will be racing into Kalamata to finish their transcontinental adventure, we're expecting riders a little bit further back to be up against that time cut and really trying to make sure that they get through that split parkour too,
across Czechia and Slovakia in time to make sure that they get their brevet card stamped and that they can continue within general classification. But we know as well that there'll be plenty of riders who potentially miss that time cut, and it won't mean the end of their journey. They will still be looking to achieve a race finish overall, and we'll be cheering all of them on as they make their journey south.
Chris is CP manager at Control Point 2. You never quite know when the next rider is going to arrive to get their brevet card stamped. Earlier, in the wee hours, he caught up with Jean-Francois Barrias, Cap 130.
You're here at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
At Checkpoint 2. How's that feel?
Oh, it was very tough, but it's very exciting because it's the full moon, and I spent a very exciting ride on the Tatras Mountain, especially on the gravel section. And finally, the road section was just odd. No, it was very exciting.
Do you have any most memorable moments?
I've so many moments. You see the sunset on the Tatras Mountain, you say, okay, I'm there. It's the magic of this race.
Four of our five bursary riders are still out on the road at TCO number 12, and two of those four have rolled into CP2. Luca Bessems, Cap 214, has been taking her time and fighting some fatigue-related brain fog.
So I've been riding quite luxurious.
Luxurious, meaning?
I've been in hotels ever since I've been in Poland.
Okay. Yesterday I checked into my what I thought was a hostel. So I saw some showers on the hallway and I was like, okay, I can shower there. So I went in there. My key didn't work to it. So then I called the hotel owner in the middle of the night, almost 11 o'clock. And I was like, I cannot get into the shower. And he was like, what do you mean? Conclusion was, I had an own shower in my own room. So I booked a hotel instead of a hostel.
Okay.
And I just parked my bike in front of the shower door, the bathroom door. So I never noticed. So he was like, are you serious? Like, this has never happened to me. So that's, my brain stops sometimes.
How do you feel about your next journey south?
A bit nervous, to be honest. I've not traveled so much. I've also been sleeping in hotels just to feel a bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
I've not had any bad experiences, but I have to get used to the culture of it.
Yeah.
And the heat.
Yes.
And I'm allergic to gluten, so the food will also be harder to find for me.
Right.
So I'm a bit nervous, but I will just take it day by day and then I'll be fine.
Jack Wright, Cap 52, is another bursary rider into CP2. Their own highs and lows seem to be matching those of the terrain.
I was kind of rooting on the fly and going between two routes, and then got pretty lost in some forest somewhere. And then started to feel a bit unwell, and then, took it slower for a couple of days there. So. But I found some good food and things along the way, you know, and some really nice places to stay, so. I feel like my race has just gone, the rhythm of it has gone with the terrain, you know? Like, I really enjoyed it in Norway, and then as it got flat, then I felt pretty flat, you know? And then since it got into, I feel like my race starts now, really, because there's, so much more climbing, so that'll be better for me.
Sebi Lehrmann, Cap 64, has decided to stop checking his position on the tracking map because it seems to bring an unexpected benefit.
I decided not to race, and since then, I'm fast.
Yeah. So you're not looking at trackers anymore? I can follow you if you want to there. So I don't make you lose time.
Trackers because I'm interested.
Yeah.
I really love the story of ultra cycling and, for example, Robin. And but I don't have a problem when someone is faster than me. And since then, I'm faster.
What do you think is this?
I don't know. My problem is I don't like to ride the bike too long for the day, so maybe when I know that I will go to the hotel earlier, I can push harder, and over the whole day I do the same thing, but I know the hotel is in 2 hours. I will check in at 8 o'clock p.m. It's early, but I love to ride in the night, so I decided to get up early, maybe just after midnight, and in the night it's exactly my time. I love it. In the morning, wow, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
And I decided to do this route because it's a little bit higher. It's not too hot. It's perfect weather to cycling.
That's so
You are amazing. On a high, huh? You seem so happy. That's beautiful to see.
Andrew Phillips, Cap 00A, Lost Dot's very own man on the road, has sent us another dispatch. First he lost his racing partner John, then he had to force himself across the flat Polish plains, and now he's having a few passport-related problems. It's less a philosophical case of Project why do we take on these ultra challenges, and more like, why won't you let me cross this border?
I am cycling the wrong way up my route because I just got turned back from the Hungarian-Serbian border because the border crossing point that I chose was EU passports only, despite the fact that I'm actually an EU resident of Italy. I wasn't allowed through because of my British passport. And just as I was standing there being told that, a French rider came up and was allowed straight through. Yeah, thanks Brexit. And now I have to ride all the way around to the next border crossing, and I don't know how far it is because I didn't work out the distance between the two routes because I don't want to know the answer. But safe to say, I am doing extra miles just because of my passport. I understand that in many ways I'm very lucky. Some people can't even get visas to come to the EU, but also I don't feel that lucky right now, and I wish that I had a mysterious Irish grandfather or something like that.
With a finish line in Greece and a bobsleigh track for riders to cycle, this year's TCR has had a certain Olympian feel to it. Here's another Sophie Explains.
You may have noticed now that this year's TCR route has been taking riders through almost 3,000 years of Olympic history. It started in Norway, a country forever linked with the Winter Olympics. A few days later, riders crossed the old Sarajevo bobsleigh track, and now the final route parcours begins in Olympia, where the Olympic Games were born. So I think it's time for another Sophie Explains. Today, the Olympic Games. The first Olympic Games were held almost 2,800 years ago in 7076 BC, right here in Olympia. But they weren't just a sporting event. They were first and foremost a religious festival dedicated to Zeus, the king of Greek gods. Every 4 years, athletes traveled from across the Greek world to compete, not for money, not for sponsorship, not even for a gold medal. The winner received nothing more than an olive wreath, but the honor they earned back home was priceless. And before a single race even started, something remarkable happened. A sacred truce was declared. For a few weeks, wars had to stop. Messengers traveled across Greece announcing what was called the Olympic truce, so athletes and spectators could travel safely to Olympia and return home afterwards. Imagine that, a sporting event so important that people stopped fighting. Of course, today Olympic Games look very different. The ancient games eventually disappeared for more than 1500 years. Then in 1896, they were revived by a French educator, Pierre de Coubertin, with one ambitious idea: to bring the world together through sport. A very beautiful idea, although he had forgot half of the population as women were still excluded. Just like in the ancient games, they weren't allowed to compete. In ancient Olympia, married women weren't even allowed to watch. Their role was simply to stay on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the 1900 Paris game that women were finally allowed to compete. There were 22. Since then, the Olympic movement has come a long way. More than 10,000 athletes from over 200 countries now compete at the Olympic Games. And at the Paris 2024 Olympics, for the very first time, there were exactly as many women as men competing. Seeing initiatives like 100 TCR Women campaign makes me hopeful that one day we will tell a similar story about ultra endurance. So the sports have changed. The scale has changed, but the values haven't changed that much. Here's my favorite part. The ancient Olympics took fair play incredibly seriously. If an athlete cheated, they had to pay a huge fine, and that money was used to build bronze statues of Zeus right at the entrance to the stadium. Each one carried the name of the cheater and the reason they had been punished. Imagine arriving at the biggest race of your life and walking past a permanent reminder that someone before you had chosen to win without honor. And somehow, That reminds me of one of the last but not least rules number 10 of TCR, ride in the spirit of self-reliance and equal opportunity. No one is building bronze statues anymore, but nearly 3,000 years later and 5,000 kilometers later, the idea is exactly the same. Your result matters, but how you achieve it matters even more.
Having switched to ride as a pair outside of GC, Jonna Kessenheimer, cap number 10, and Christian Holweg, cap 14, have made it to Sarajevo together. Shortly after making that decision, Christian started getting knee pain. So to get this far is an achievement in itself.
And I thought that like it would not be possible to continue because yeah. Christian had really bad knee inflammation.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, but not, like now everything feels as a win.
Yeah, like relieved yeah, of so cool. That feeling like having to stop or scratch.
Yeah, and I...
Sorry.
I don't know why I'm so emotional. I just feel like it's really cool.
You're never emotional.
Yeah, I'm just also really happy that we can share it, like having the privilege and the time and the resources to like do this race 3 years in a row and now even share it. So cool.
We've already celebrated one birthday at TCO number 12. Yesterday, it was the turn of Maxime Priere, cap 164, foregoing his usual sausage-based race diet. All he wanted for his birthday was a single pleasure, a decent cup of coffee.
I have a thing to say.
Okay.
Very important.
Okay.
All the day, the 28th, that was my birthday.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
No, it's too late now.
Oh, yesterday, you mean?
Yeah, well, happy birthday anyway.
Yesterday.
And I, all the day, I was looking for a good coffee. I go in free gas station with the coffee machine in maintenance. That's happened. Never happened. That.
No.
I buy one coffee on the morning that was very shitty because I crossed the Danube with a ferry.
Okay.
A very small boat. And actually, I found the coffee at 6 this afternoon.
Okay.
That was a long day.
Well, it was a good coffee. You finally found it at 6 for your birthday.
Yeah. Because I arrived around midnight and I leave at 5 in the morning. So I pay for not much stuff. And she say, oh, you have a, I can give you a iced coffee if you want. Metal
yeah.
box.
Yeah, the can, but the can coffee. Yeah,
shit. So yeah, that was a long day.
Let's skip to control point 4, where Tim De Vita, twice a podium finisher and currently in the top 10 riders at TCO number 12, can start to think about that finish line in Kalamata.
I'm going to Greece, and then yes, that's why I'm going to look this up now. I'm going to see where I will spend the night, and it's probably going to be the last night I will spend for a longer period. And then I will hopefully survive on power naps. I think the distance is about, where are we now? 570 kilometers till the finish.
That's a very impressive chart you've got there. It's like the tiniest little writing you've got printed out for
yeah,
you.
It's a bit too small. Normally I print it a little bit bigger so I can read it on the bike, but this is quite difficult, especially when it's shaky. No, I really have to stop this time. Normally I can read these things on the bike, but I was a bit cheap on the paper and the lamination, apparently. So 570, I won't be able to do that one day, but I think I can survive and drag along, and hopefully the Finnish parkour will not be too horrible.
Let's hear from Andrew Phillips again. He's been speaking to Ian Carter from Abidjura, one of our race partners, who wants to know if this year's TCR has been as fast as it seems. And you'll have to forgive a little background noise.
The chat from within side the race is that a lot of people are saying that like this feels like an extremely fast TCR, across the field, not just Robin blazing his own trail, but actually for like I guess that chasing group and I guess the field as a whole. Have you kind of felt that momentum like at the start?
What I'd like to do actually post race is really go away and like do some analysis of like average distances over, you know, top 10, top 20, top 30 over the last like 5 years. I think that'd be really interesting. But the way I look at it is that people have always been going very fast at the front, but maybe there's it's packing out between places like 5 and 40, that kind of thing. And it's just getting super strong in that, like, not quite competing for the podium top 5, but, you know, still doing 400k a day or almost 400k a day. I think there's like real strength in the slightly further back than the front, but still incredibly fast group.
And I guess similarly, are you kind of finding that more people are prioritizing like proper, like sheltered rest, kind of like reflecting, I guess, that change in narrative that's maybe been happening over like the past few years, again, at like that pointier end of the race, I guess, with Robin and Victor, with the way that they're really approaching like riding hard, but resting well, with frequency, and seeing that also go further down like the rest of the field?
Totally, yeah. I think that's one example, but what it speaks of more generally is like this professionalism isn't quite the right word, but like this is comprehensive knowledge base out there now, whether that's, you know, online, whether that's because so many people know someone who's done well now, and people, like, those trade secrets aren't really a secret anymore, and that formula for success is there.
As evening arrives on day 10 at TCO number 12, Robin Gimperla, cap number 1, is halfway along the Finnish parcours and looks a dead cert to win this year's race. The team in control car 1 are in position and waiting for him to join them in either the dying embers of the day or the early hours of the next. Also waiting at the finish line is Robin's mum, Maya.
So, how are you feeling about Robin's arrival?
Oh, well, I'm very nervous. Always the last few hours until he's here is because it's finished on the finish line, not before, not even 1 hour before. So that makes me very nervous. And now he's very slow and you don't know what's going on up there. And I don't know the road. I don't know. Yeah, anything could happen still, which makes me nervous, yes.
Do you find this feeling throughout the race, or is it just kind of in these moments, the approach to the end or the approach, the very...
Well, sometimes it's better, sometimes not. It's always depending on what I'm doing, so... But usually when it gets to the end, I'm getting more and more nervous. That's the funny thing about it. Should be happy to have the end so close, but no, it's the other way around. I'm pretty, nervous now.
Do you find it kind of something to adjust to? How his celebrity has almost grown over the last few years?
Difficult to say. I guess what he's doing is amazing, and I really love to see what he's doing. But still, as a mother, you're always concerned, and you're happy when he's at home in bed. Nothing could happen.
Do you have any idea why he races? Do you have a perspective on, why Robin does these such extreme things?
I don't know how he got into it. Actually, it was at the beginning he was a cross country racer, and then he quit because of his studies, and then he made all those tours with his friends and with his brother, and they got always longer and longer. And then all of a sudden, one of his friends told him, "You never get tired. You always are going on. And so I want to see you tired as well. So go and check in for Transcontinental. You can try that one. So maybe you get tired and you feel how we feel, actually, when we're moving with you."
Wow.
And so he got into it and he still loves it.
In the early hours of day 11, Robin Gimperla, cap number 1, rolls off the Finnish parcours and into Kalamata. After a ferociously fast first couple of days in Norway, he was the first to catch the ferry to mainland Europe and never looked back, taking his second TCR crown in 10 days, 8 hours and 55 minutes. Robin is the winning rider at the 12th edition of the Transcontinental Race.
Chum.
How much did you plan before? How much was this sort of like a calculated plan, and how much did it just evolve as you rode and realized what you were capable of this race?
I think it was a good mixture. I think for example I had a lot. I think this is my TCO with the most gravel apart from parkours. I had a lot of gravel and I was just super confident in my wheel and tire setup. I knew this is best setup ever with the bike, so I can do it easily. And then you plan quite aggressively, but you don't like check every gravel section perfectly. So you're always there. You're always maybe a bit nervous when you hit it, but you know at least okay you have the best possible weapon for it. And that was a bit, I would say, the vibe for everything. Also, maybe with how you went to sleep, how long you would sleep. It was intense. You always think how much you need and then a bit more. Clearly not like racing perfection, but also that's not what I'm interested in at the moment, I think.
So, Robin, I asked you before as well, before the race, why did you come back to TCR and you said, well, it's the classic, it's first love. Well, now on the finish line, why did you race?
When arguing about that fact, that going fast on these long trips adds a different perspective to it, which is what I often say, if there's someone around who thinks it's stupid what we do, I think this is here the most obvious. That feeling of just having started in Trondheim and now sitting here at an extremely southern European point is so surreal. Yeah, I feel like this is really where you can feel what distance you can cover by bike, and I think that gives me a lot of joy, probably also in long term. But also I have to say that it's also my first race where I come back and try to win it again. Clearly not the person to win stuff seven times. I feel like from a racing perspective, there's from a riding perspective for sure, but from a racing perspective, there's not so much more to get anymore now for me personally.
Yes.
Because it's the coolest edition and yeah.
Done.
Done, yeah.
With this year's winner safely crowned, there's just time for a recap of the day elsewhere on the route from race reporter Sophie.
Time for the recap of the day. Today in control car number 2, we went back and forth between Serbia and Montenegro trying to catch riders. I believe we are in Serbia tonight, but honestly I've lost track of time and really don't know how the riders are doing it. Some of the riders here could already imagine their perfect finish line cocktail, as apparently a mixture of Coca-Cola, Powerade, Red Bull and iced tea in a moldy bidon is not enough. They are really picky, huh? Thankfully, we have amazing volunteers out there at CPs with a mic, because just because the first dot has reached the shore doesn't mean we are not still watching the other 397 dots that left Trondheim 10 days ago. Yes, you too, at Van Steinberger, cap number 79, our dear Lantern Rouge. Gossip Girl moment. XOXO.
Gossip Girl is real?
Spotted Sausage Guy, also known as Maxime Krier, cap 164, caught red-handed for ranging for a porcini mushroom in the woods. We're not saying he's giving up on sausages, but the evidence is mounting. But enough of that, because today we've got a bravery badge and it goes to Robin Kimperley. I honestly couldn't decide why to give him the badge. Was it for casually redefining what fast means, or for making everyone else's record look broken, or maybe for making the media team question why they thought a 200 horsepower engine would be enough? No, it's for making 5,000 kilometers look like a Sunday coffee ride. We're not impressed at that point. We are just slightly offended. Last year, the French president congratulated Victor after his TCR victory. Switzerland, your move. You've got yourself a new TCR winner. Congratulations, Robin. CP2 closes tomorrow, and it's with great pleasure that I can tell you that already 210 riders are behind CP2, but with a lot of dots moving into its direction, it's likely there will be many more tomorrow. Tonight, also 10 riders are beyond CP4, and our first Linda will most likely arrive tomorrow there. Number of scratches, 121. The ancient Olympian champions won an olive wreath. We cannot promise an olive wreath, but because the finish line is in Kalamata, at least the olives should be excellent. And until you try them, keep up the good work, and in the meantime, good night and good ride, everyone.
Remember, you can read Jake's daily race reports from the Road on the Lost website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion, Apadura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design.